Good morning, everyone.
We are reading this way today, I think. Will you begin, Lyuba?
But silently, like the dread, all the reason is unsolved. Reason that scans and builds, but cannot build, or builds and builds, because she doubts her work. I am, I love, I see, I act, I will. Death answers her one deep, surrounded cry. Know also, knowing, thy shall cease to love, and cease to live, delivered from thy heart, for shall thy rest forever and be still, consenting to the impermanence of things. But savagely plan for my death. When I have loved forever, I shall know. Loving me knows the truth, all changing months. I know that knowledge is a vast embrace. I know that every being is myself. In every heart is hidden thy mirrored one. I know the calm transcendent bears the world, the veiled inhabitant, the silent lord. I feel his secret act, his intimate fire. I hear the morning of his cosmic voice. I know my coming was a wave from God, for all his sons were concerned in my earth, and one who loves in us can wave by them. Then was my born among the monstrous stars,
dower
with a mind and heart to conquer thee. In the eternity of his ruthless will, sure by, and his unmanned, like one disdaining, violent, helpless world. From victim lips, death answered not. He stood in silence, and a darkness wrapped, a figure motionless, a shadow being, girt with the terrors of his secret sword. Half seen in clouds, appeared a solemn face. Night's dusk tiara was his muttered hair. The ashes of the fire his forehead sank. Once more, a wanderer in the unending night, blindly forbidden by dead victim eyes, she traveled through the dark, unhoping vasts. Around her world, the sundering waste of blue, its swirling emptiness and joyless death, resentful of her thought and life and love. Through the long, fading night, by her compelled, bloody, half seen in her unearthly path, phantasmal is the dimness moved the three.
Thank you. Thank you. So, death has been trying to persuade her to give up her love for Satyavan, give up her hope to carry him with her back to the world of life. He says, live in thyself, forget the man thou lovest. My last grand death shall rescue thee from life. Then shalt thou rise into thy unmoved source, meaning the realm of death. But Savitri replied to the dread voice. She's still completely defiant. O death who reasonest, I reason not. Reason that scans and breaks, but cannot build, or builds in vain because she doubts her work. I am. I love. I see. I act. I will. She's basing this on her own experience and knowledge. But death still argues back.
But how do you explain
this line? Her line, I am. I love. Yeah, this line. This is a statement of her personal experience and knowledge. So in the face of that, all these falsehoods of death, all these attempts of his to draw the wool over her eyes, this has no effect at all because of the knowledge that she has in herself, because of all that she has experienced in her yoga since we started reading book 7. Yes, the affirmation of eternal life, yes. But he answers, you've missed something out. You have to know also. And if you know, if you have the knowledge, you will cease to love. You will cease to will. You will be set free from the wishes, the impulsions of your heart. Then you will be able to rest forever and be still, be at peace. You will accept the fact of death, the impermanence of things. But she replies, when I have loved forever, I shall know. There's no end to my love and my knowledge. Love in me knows the truth. All changings mask. All the changes that happen in the cosmos, they are hiding a truth of permanence. She knows that truth. I know that knowledge is a vast embrace. I know that every being is myself. In every heart is hidden the myriad one, the one who becomes and expresses himself as the myriad, the uncountable many. I know the calm transcendent bears the world. This world is upheld by the calm transcendent divine beyond all division. He is the veiled inhabitant. He's the one who's supporting the existence of this world. He is the silent Lord. Savitri says, I feel his secret act, all that he is doing. I feel his intimate fire. I hear the murmur of the cosmic voice. I know my coming into this world, into this universe, was a wave from God. For all his sons, all the sons in the whole cosmos were conscious in my birth when I was born. The one who loves in us came veiled by death. Then was man born among the monstrous stars, dowered with a mind and heart to conquer thee. Dowered, it means endowed with, gifted with. When man was created, when man was brought into the universe, he was gifted with a mind and a heart that is able to conquer you, death. To this, death has no reply. In the eternity of his ruthless will, sure of his empire and his armored might, like one disdaining vile and helpless words from victim lips, death answered not again. He's so sure of his rule and his power, he doesn't bother to answer. She's a victim. She has no power against him. So he doesn't care what she says. He stood in silence and in darkness wrapped, a figure motionless, a shadow vague, girt with the terrors of his secret sword. He knows that he's wearing his weapon that can destroy anything. No. So why should he bother to reply to these words from victim lips? But then how his appearance changes. This is very interesting, that at this point, half seen in clouds, appeared a somber face. His face can be seen, this dark face, surrounded by matted hair, night's dusk tiara, the stars, he's carrying the stars, the evening twilight stars in his hair. Who is this? The ashes of the pyre, his forehead sign. He's marked here, the funeral pyre. He's used those ashes for his sign. This is an image of Lord Rudra. Rudra is an expression of Shiva. Here he's not taking this beneficent Shiva form. He's still holding the angry Rudra form. But that change has come about. So Savitri takes this as a sign to go on moving forward, following Satyavan. Once more, a wanderer in the unending night, blindly forbidden by dead, vacant eyes, she traveled through the dumb, unhoping vasts. Around her rolled the shuddering waste of gloom, its swallowing emptiness and joyless death, resentful of her thought and life and love. Through the long, fading night, by her compelled, gliding, half seen on their unearthly path, phantasmal in the dimness, move the three.
There is a similar idea given also here in line 416. Savitri says, for all these sons were conscient in my birth. Within Krishna told Arjuna, I have seen so many sons and daughters, and Arjuna was asking him, so you are contemporary to me, and you are telling that I know all the previous births of you and all. How do you know that? Then Krishna says, you know only this birth, whereas I know
all the other births. Yes. Thank you, Purvana. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel also that before I came, the death is already for me not so sure like before. I feel at least that.
There's some change. Oh, yeah. Yes. 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 So what Bhuvana was saying is that she compared this statement of Savitri's to a statement of Lord Krishna to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that I know all your births. But Arjuna says, but you are the same age as me. How can you have known everything that has happened to me in all my previous births? But he says, you only know this birth, but I know all your previous births. So Savitri is saying something like I'm all the sons in the universe were conscious when I was born, and I'm aware of those lights, those permanent, unchanging lights. So you can't terrify me, death.
Mm-hmm. In line 461, and one who loves in a place where by death, what does she refer
to? One who loves in us. Within us, there's the divine being with all his love. And when he takes a human birth, then he puts on this veil of subjection to ignorance and death. But it's the one who loves in us and will always love in us. And he's the one that we will always love, even if he's veiled by death. So she just continues, once more a wanderer in the unending night. That seems to be still there. And there are these dead, vacant eyes watching her as if they want to prevent her moving forwards. But she goes on travelling through those vast spaces, dumb, silent, which seem to have no hope in them anywhere. All around her is this shuddering waste of gloom, a darkness that is moving in a threatening way. Its swallowing emptiness, joyless death, seems to reject her thought and her life and her love. But as they move forward through the long fading night, the night is becoming less dark because she's moving forward through it. Death and Satyavan are also compelled to move through the long fading night by her compelled, her power, which is driving them forward. But they are gliding half seen, like ghosts or dreams on their unearthly path, phantasmal, like phantoms in the dimness, in that fading darkness. The three move forward. And that brings us to the end of Canto 2 of the journey in eternal night. And even the end of book 9. We'll move on to book 10, the book of the double twilight. We'll see that this canto begins in darkness but moves towards light. Tuan, will you read?
Book 10, the book of the double twilight. Canto 1, the dream twilight of the ideal. All still was dread and desolate. There was no change, nor any hope of change. In this lay the dream, which was a house of boy, a walk to nowhere in a land of naught. Ever they drifted without aim or goal. Gloom led to worse gloom, death to an emptier death. In some positive non-beings, purposeless vast, through farmers wastes dumb and unknowable. An ineffectual beam of suffering light, despairing darkness, dark their step. Memory of a glory lost, even while it grew, it seemed unreal there. Yet haunted nihil's chill, stupendous real, unquenchable, perpetual, lonely, no, a pale ghost of some dead eternity. It was as if she must pay now her debt, her vain presumption to exist and think, to some brilliant mind that conceived her soul. This most she must absorb with endless pangs, her deep original sin, the will to be, and the sin last greatest, the spiritual pride, that made of dust equal itself with heaven, its scorn of the warm, written in the mind.
Writhing, yeah.
Writhing in the mouth. Condemned, ephemeral, born from nature's dream, refusal of the transient creature's role, the claim to be a living fire of God, the will to be immortal and divine.
Let's pause there for a moment. There seems to be no change. All still was darkness, dread and desolate. There was no change nor any hope of change. In this black dream, which was a house of void, an emptiness, a nothingness. So their movement is a walk to nowhere in a land of nothingness. So they seem to be just drifting without any aim or goal. The gloom gets darker, gloom led to worse gloom. They seem to be going deeper down. Depth leads to an emptier depth, a depth of greater nothingness. In some positive non-beings, purposeless vast, through formless wastes, dumb and unknowable. This is the opposite of existence, the denial of existence. Some positive non-beings, purposeless, vast, a vastness without meaning or aim. They're moving through these formless wastes where nothing grows, where all is sterile and empty. These wastes are dumb and unknowable. But as the three of them go on moving forward, an ineffectual beam of suffering light follows them, dogging their steps. A faithful dog will always follow just at his master's heel. So if you are dogged by something, it's like something shadowing you, following you like your shadow. So this ineffectual beam of light. This light is suffering, but still it's following them through the despairing darkness. It's dogging their steps, like the remembrance of a glory lost. It's as if that light is remembering some greater truth. And that little light grows. Even while it grew, it still seems unreal in that darkness. But still it goes on following them, yet haunted that chill, stupendous realm of nothingness. That little light is unquenchable. It can't be put out. It's perpetual. It goes on and on and on. Although it is lonely, no companion, although it seems to be nothing, it seems to be a pale ghost of some eternity that has died. This is like a kind of threat to Savitri. It was as if she must pay now her debt, that she's done something unlawful, something dangerous, and now she's going to have to face the consequences. That's the suggestion which she's receiving. It was as if she must pay now her debt, her vain presumption to exist and think. This is the suggestion that death is throwing on her. You have no right to be here. You have no right to exist and to think. Above all, you have no right to defy me. You are going to have to pay for this, for her vain presumption. It's when you presume to do something that you have no right to. No? She's going to have to pay her debt to some brilliant Maya, some bright illusion that has given rise to her soul. And what she has to absolve, what she has to pay for most of all, with endless pain, is the deep original sin, her deep original sin, her will to exist, and the even greater sin, the sin last, greatest of spiritual pride, that is always supposed to be the worst sin, no? That made of dust, she's a creature of the earth, no? Made of dust, equaled itself with heaven, claims to be the same as a divine being. Its scorn of the worm writhing in the mud, condemned, ephemeral, born from nature's dream, refusal of the transient creature's role. It's as if she's refusing to be a worthless human being. She's claiming to be a living fire of God. Her will is to be immortal and divine. She's accused of all this terrible disobedience. In that tremendous darkness, heavy and bare, she atoned for all since the first act, when sprang the error of the consciousness of time, the rending of the inconscient seal of sleep, the primal and unpardoned revolt that broke peace and silence of the nothingness which was before a seeming universe appeared in a vanity of imagined space, and life arose, engendering grief and pain. This is the suggestion that he's projecting at her. Anyone wants to ask anything about this?
Why she must pay and no because
because she exists. She claims the right to exist and to love and to know, but there's a force that says, no, you have no such right. You're disobeying the laws of the real universe, my universe of death. You have no right to go on claiming the right to exist and to love. So it is like a great accusation coming at her. She is made to experience these feelings. He's beaming these suggestions at her. Death, this god of this power of death and nothingness. She has to pay not only for whatever she might have done individually, but for everything that has happened in the universe since the beginning, for this change that has come about of consciousness in the universe. Primal, the original revolt, this disobedience that can't be forgiven in this suggestion, that because it has broken the peace and silence of the nothingness which was, of everything that existed before this illusory universe appeared in this illusory space, this vanity of imagined space, which has allowed this phenomenon of life to arise. And the phenomenon of life has given rise to grief and pain. The suggestion says that in fact all this is just imagination, a great negation, powerful no. The eternal no is the true face of reality. And that goes on prohibiting, saying no to this useless process of time. And when there is no world, no creature anymore, when this intrusion of time has been blotted out and reversed, that great negation will still be there, unbodied, bodiless, saved from thought, at peace, that everything has to go back to that state of nothingness.
Yes, Radha Bhan, but this is death's opinion.
This is death's suggestion, his strong suggestion to intimidate her, to send her back to earth.
Any question?
Yes.
Every time I use this process of atonement,
mm.
Why should she atone?
Why should she atone? Yes.
But obviously it has a role, so I'm hoping you might explain.
No, this is just death's suggestion. That by existing, by being who she is, by living and loving and claiming the right to knowledge and love, she's somehow violating the law of death.
Right.
And for this, she is going to be punished. That's the suggestion that he's beaming at her. She's not going to accept this suggestion.
But it says she atoned.
Ah, she atoned. Yes.
And I've come across this also in other places which your mother does, and I feel it's like something I have to wake up to myself, why she does it.
Yes, of course, the same suggestion is put in Asvapati, on Asvapati. The same suggestion is put on Asvapati when he goes down into the darkness, and that he deserves all this. He has to pay for everything that's gone wrong in the universe.
What means atonement?
To atone for something, to make up. So you have to be punished. It's a very Catholic thing, no? You've committed a sin and you have to do something. You have to do some penance or something to make up for that sin you have committed. Mm.
Shradhavan, so does that mean that death is implying that without him, we wouldn't even be here?
Yes, that's right.
He keeps on insisting on this thing.
Yes.
And many people believe that.
So this is his thought, no? That when time's intrusion has been blotted out, still this negation, this no, this nothingness, that will be the real thing. That's the face of the real, no? And if you don't believe that, then you're in trouble. Then you're accursed. You may feel that you have a divine being within you, but that is going to suffer because of this mistake that you're making. Yeah.
She atoned. I was wondering whether, so you said Asvapati also, he had to and then it reminds me of Jesus Christ. He had also to atone for his father creation.
Yes.
So it seems to be perhaps that the divine himself has to atone for what he did somewhere.
At least this is the suggestion. I think death can be, this God of death, he can be so convincing. But we don't have to believe what he tells us.
Yeah, but as she said...
Well, there's some feeling like that, yes. Savitri is passing through. She's a beam of suffering light. So she is suffering in this state. And that somehow seems to be the price that she has to pay to bring Satyavan back to earth. which she will do, of course.
But this is the woman like that. I mean, most of the people are feeling that death is that, and we have not other possibility. How many people think that we are going to have another death? I mean, she represents that, the world.
So let me read these last few lines, no? Accursed in what had been her Godhead's source, condemned to live forever empty of bliss, her immortality, her chastisement, that's her punishment, that she will go on existing forever in this state of suffering. And this suggestion does come to the soul now and again. It happens, no? Her spirit, guilty of being, guilty of existing, is wandering there in that darkness, doomed, moving forever through eternal night. But Maya, illusion, is a veil, just a covering over the face of the Absolute. In fact, a truth occult, a hidden truth, has made this mighty world. It's not the way that death wants to make it appear. The Eternal's wisdom and self-knowledge act in ignorant mind and in the body's step. The inconscient is the superconscious sleep. Sri Aurobindo has written such a wonderful paragraph about this in The Life Divine. The Life Divine, what is the real nature and function of the inconscient? An unintelligible intelligence invents creations, paradox profound. Its deep, apparent, ununderstandable contradiction. Spiritual thought is crammed in matter's forms. Unseen, it throws out a dumb energy and works a miracle by machine. All here is a mystery of contraries, darkness, a magic of self-hidden light, suffering, some secret rapture's tragic mass, and death, an instrument of perpetual life. The next passage about death is so wonderful. Will you read it, Turiya? Although death walks beside us.
Although death walks beside us on life's road, the dim bystander of the body stopped, and the last judgment on man's futile works, other is the return of its ambiguous face. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride the soul must take, crossed from birth to birth, a great defeat, pregnant, a whip to lash us towards our deathless. The inconscient world is the spirit's self-made room, eternal night, shadow of eternal day. Night is not our beginning, nor our end. She is the dark mother, in whose womb we have hid, safe from too swift a awakening to world being. We came to her from a supernal light, by light we live, and to the light we go. Here, in the seat of darkness, mute and lone, in the heart of everlasting nothingness, life conquered now, even by that feeble being, its faint infiltration thrilled the blind death mass. Almost, it changed into a glimmering sight that housed the phantom of an orient sun, whose orb pupilled the eye of nothingness. A golden fire came in and burned night's heart. Her dusky mindlessness began to dream. The inconscient conscious grew. Night fell and bought. Assailed in the sovereign emptiness of its reign, the intolerant darkness paled and drew apart, till only a few black remnants stained that trail. But on the fading edge of damn lost space, still the red dragon body solemnly loomed, adversary of the slow, struggling dawn, defending its ground of tortured mystery. It trailed its coils, to the dead material air and curling head down.
Mm. So first there's this suggestion. No? She's condemned to live forever empty of bliss, her immortality, her chastisement. So her spirit, guilty of being, guilty of existing, wandered, doomed. It's bound to suffer forever, moving forever through eternal night. But Maya is a veil of the absolute. The truth is something completely different. A truth occult, a hidden truth, has made this mighty world. The eternal's wisdom and self-knowledge act in ignorant mind. And in the body step, the inconscient is the superconscious sleep, an unintelligible intelligence, one that's beyond our understanding, has invented the profound paradox, the strangeness of this creation, the contradictoriness of it. Spiritual thought is crammed in matter's form. We don't see that matter is throwing out, projecting a dumb energy, working a miracle by a machine. So in this universe, everything here is a mystery of contraries, of apparent contradiction. Darkness is a magic of self-hidden light. And death is an instrument of perpetual life. Life repeats itself. It goes on passing through this process of apparent death, but always it renews itself eternally. And suffering, which we all shun, no, none of us want to suffer, but suffering is like a mask, a tragic mask put on by an actor in the theatre to show that now I'm acting a tragic role. The masks are like that. The mouth is down or it's up. The tragic mask and the comic mask. Suffering is some secret rapture's tragic mask. And death is an instrument of perpetual life. This sounds so paradoxical, but again, Sri Aurobindo explains it wonderfully in The Life Divine, that we can't just go on forever and ever in the same body. The body itself decays, and also we need to go through that process of dissolution because we have so many other possibilities before us. So many lives still to experience. Marie-Ange, why don't you read this again? I love to hear these lines. Although death walks beside us.
61. Although death walks beside us on life's road, a dim bystander at the body's stop, and a last judgment on man's futile works, I can see it. Other is the riddle of its ambiguous face. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride. The soul mistake was from birth to birth. The great defeat, pregnant, a whip to lash.
To lash us.
A whip to lash us towards our deathless state. The unconscious world is the spirit self-made room, eternal night, shadow of eternal day. Night is not our beginning, but our end. She is the dark mother in whose womb we have lived. Safe from too sweet a waking to world pass.
World pain.
World pain. Just a second. We came to the front, the supernal light. By life we live, and to the light we go. Here, in the seat of darkness, mute and lone, in the heart of everlasting nothingness, light conquered now, even by far feeble beam, faint infiltration, drilled, blind, the blind death mass. Almost it changed into a glimmering sight, that's housed up the phantom of an oriole sun, whose orb pupilled the eye of nothingness. A golden fire came in and burned night's heart. Thus, madlessness began to gain. Inconscient conscious grew, Nanak fell and thought, a cell in the sovereign emptiness of the domain, the intolerant darkness failed and grew apart. Still, only a few black remnants stand that way, but on the failing edge of downward space, still a great dragon body sullenly looms, adversary of the slow slogging dawn, defending its crown of tortured mystery. It trailed its call to the dead, martyred air, and curving fled down a great slope of time.
Thank you. Anybody wants to ask anything about this? Yes, a golden fire came in. I've also lost it. It burns the heart of night. And then that dusky emptiness, that darkness, began to dream.
Dusky means like a...
Dark-coloured, dark-skinned, dark-coloured. Sorry? Night. So a change comes, no? Sorry, I'm not hearing properly, so Daniel. Yes, death has a role to play, no? Yes. That's what touches me so much about these lines, no? Although death is walking beside us always on life's road. It's there when we are born, at the body's start, and it's a last judgment on all the things that we've tried in vain to do during our lives. No? Still, it's the step we have to take to move higher. No? The next step, even if we stub our toe and just fall up the step, still a stumbling stride. The soul has to take this step to cross from one birth to another birth.
Always for glory.
Yes. Yes.
Not always. Sometimes this is also very untimely, so that one cannot say that it's really.
That it's a good thing.
The principle is for growing, but the circumstances under which death sometimes slays. Yesterday we buried the father of a young ashram boy, and that boy is maybe 12 years.
Oh.
And when he brought the ashes of his father, his face was pained like death. And one could say, this is so touching, that one cannot always say that death is always welcome. How will you tell a child who just experienced his father 1 year back, like a strong man full of vitality, that now he has to go on and on?
Yeah.
You can just embrace, that's all you can do. So that means, I want to say, just as a principle, it's all true. But if we translate it into life, and what life...
Into human terms.
We have to fight that also on any levels.
Yeah. I think that's what Sri Aurobindo is telling us also in these lines, no? And elsewhere. Yes.
But I remember also, I agree totally with this also, but I remember also that it's all from Dr. Alakandi, that parents came with her child, who was 7 or 8, 9 years old, the first time to the ashram. The child went with the parents, and then the car came, and the child was by the car put to death before the ashram. He was very, and the parents and said, oh wow, it was very difficult to find out. Alakani said he then finding out the child's wish was only wish to get by a car get put to death, that the car is rolling over him and he comes to death. That was the child's wish. So it is, I don't say that it's good or not, but how often the reason is behind, but how important is being out.
Yeah, I think. Whatever the reason behind, it's extremely difficult for us to see it or to say anything about it. We have to be very careful about that.
And then he told also, finally told this to the parents, and they could understand when they got another child, and this is
it. So anyway, what we're reading about here is this transition from the eternal night into this new canto, Dream Twilight of the Ideal, which is actually a very, very beautiful canto.
Oriate means golden.
Sorry?
Oriate.
Oriate means golden, yeah. But these lines are very, very mysterious, aren't they? This here, in this seat of darkness, mute and lone, in the heart of everlasting nothingness, light conquered now, even by that feeble beam, that tiny little beam of light, which is indicating the presence of Savitri. That little beam, it infiltrates very faintly through the darkness, like a drill going through this blind, deaf mass. And as it does that, that light almost changed into a glimmer, a faint sight, a kind of power of vision, of future possibilities. And this glimmering sight housed or protected the phantom, the ghost of a golden sun. And that golden sun seems to be almost like the pupil of an eye. The eye is usually darkish. The pupil is also dark, no? But that's the power of vision. This golden fire came in and burns the heart of night. And this dusky mindlessness of the darkness begins to dream. So what has been unconscious becomes more conscious. Night is feeling and thinking, and the darkness is attacked, assailed. Death was so proud of that sovereign emptiness of its reign, that nothing was real was there. But it's attacked in that emptiness. And the intolerant darkness grows pale like the first light of dawn. It drew apart until there's pale light and there's only few black remnants are staining that ray of light. The darkness is going away, but still a great dragon body is sullenly looming there on the horizon. It's the adversary, it's the enemy of the slow, struggling dawn. And it's defending its ground of tortured mystery, all this which is unexplainable mystery, which is about suffering. This dragon body trails its coils. We see pictures of Chinese dragons now with many, many coils. Through the dead, martyred air, the air even is suffering, no? But that dragon body flees away across the horizon, fled down a grey slope of time.
For me, if you look etymologically, aura is all or is down in Latin, and if you feel that she was the first ray of Savitri of the sun. Savitri was called also the first ray of the sun, every morning, the first one. I feel that somehow it's an ocean here within Oriental sun. It's not only golden, it's also aurora, it's also Savitri, no? The first ray.
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Radhavan, when we talk about Purusha and Prakriti, so it's Purusha, which is the soul, which goes as a light. Because as we now know, the soul is like a small thumb of light that comes and brightens up Prakriti, which is the enslavement, isn't it? Prakriti.
I can't say anything about any of these things. I can't say anything about these things. Shall we stop there for today? Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.